Welcome to the Hope a Thing of Podcast, where we discuss cybersecurity for small business and how to avoid scams. I am Melissa Atkins, the Training and Development Coordinator for the Native Learning Center. Today on the show, we are excited to have Leslie Fair, Attorney Division of Consumer and Business Education for the Federal Trade Commission. Thanks for being on the show today. Could you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation to speak to your listeners. It's a privilege and honor, and I hope we're going to have some fun talking about critical issues. As you know, my name is Leslie Fair. I am an attorney with the Federal Trade Commission. For 25 years, I was in court bringing case after case after case. For the past 10 years, I describe my job as carpe podium, meaning that I want to talk to small businesses, businesses of every size, about what the FTC can do to help them grow their business, to prevent being the target of scams and frauds, to prevent them being subject to cybersecurity attacks. So we're here to help businesses grow and flourish. We think that's in the best interest of business, it's the best interest of consumers, and in the best interest of the country.
Yay! I'm just so happy to have you on here. Like you said, this is such an important topic, and the FTC is truly incredible. So let's go ahead and jump in. My very first question is, what is the FTC's role in cybersecurity education for businesses?
Well, you know, a lot of people think of course, FTC stands for Federal Trade Commission, but it also stands for the consumer. We are the nation's general consumer protection agency. But in that role as a consumer protection agency, one of the important groups of consumers that we represent and defend and protect are businesses. Businesses of every size, but I would say especially small businesses. So our role in dealing with cybersecurity, and let me make it clear, we are not a technical cybersecurity agency dealing with national security kind of issues, no. But what we do is try to help businesses of every size defend and protect the personal information that they have. And listeners will know this. I mean, when you think about it, a lot of small businesses think, oh, come on, I don't have a lot of a highly sensitive information. Well, yes, you probably do. Small businesses have, for example, the W-2s of their employees or their own that have social security numbers. They have credit card numbers of their customers. So even the smallest business has information that scammers and hackers want. And so our goal is to help small businesses in as cost-effective and streamlined a way as possible, protect that information from cyber attack. Part of our role too, and we hope this is not an area where we ever get involved with anybody listening, is when companies don't take appropriate precautions, we are one of the agencies that will go in and defend consumers, bringing lawsuits against companies that do not use appropriate security. Now, let me make it clear, we're not a bunch of gotcha people. Most of our cases dealing with data security have been against companies like Equifax, have been against companies like the Wyndham Hotel chain. But companies of any size need to make sure they're doing their best to protect the information of their customers, of their employees, anything that needs to be secured.
That is just, when you think about, like, I don't have a whole lot to lose, but then when you break it down, like, well, you have W-2s and you have credit card information and it starts to build up and it's, do you have a good foundation to secure all that information? Are you protecting your business? And I think it's a great part that you just added, like the Equifax and the Wyndham. It happens to big companies too. It's just, unfortunately,
well,
it's just not for small businesses. It happens for all businesses in general. So thank you for adding that. I think that's very important. Why is it important for small businesses to think about cybersecurity? Aren't hackers interested in big companies that store a lot of information about a lot of people?
I once heard a kind of a higher up in the tech industry say something interesting that stuck in my head. He said, there are two kinds of businesses out there. Those that have been the subject of cyber attacks and those that have been the subject of cyber attacks and just don't know it. Every business is at risk. And I think why small businesses need to be particularly concerned right now is that big businesses certainly have entire offices, entire divisions. They have chief privacy officers that do nothing, or chief data officers that do nothing to monitor this. And think of it this way, for an identity thief, which is what these hackers often are, all they need is one social security number, one credit card number. And I think what a lot of them are finding is that, they want to go where it's easiest to break in. And there are a lot of big companies who have been the subject of law enforcement actions because of data breaches. But sometimes the hackers realize they may be able to sneak in easier against small businesses, simply because small businesses aren't going to have the entire division handling data security. So because of that, I think in some ways, small businesses have become a bigger target for hackers and fraudsters, which is why we at the FTC want to do whatever we can to help small businesses protect the data that they have. So cybersecurity, let me be clear, is not just for global companies. It is for the barbershop down the street. It's for the flower store. It's for the local restaurant. It's for the home-based business. Every business needs to be concerned about cybersecurity.
It's the whole big picture. Everyone's being attacked, which is very unfortunate. How can small businesses be prepared if a data breach happens to them?
The best plan is to plan ahead. And I know that can be difficult, because you'd like to think that the what if will never happen. We all hope the what if never happens. But it's the same reason why you take care to have to make sure that you have car insurance, to make sure that your house is safe from weather emergencies. Preparation is the best thing for prevention. And so that's why we think it makes sense for small businesses to set aside some time to think through what might happen if they do experience a data breach. And let me be clear, a data breach doesn't always happen through some kind of high-tech, sophisticated hacker. A data breach can happen, well, let me give you an example in a case. The FTC brought a case against a company that was collecting very important health information about customers and consumers. And they were trying to be careful. And so rather than sending the information from one of their offices to the other, they had one of their staffers physically, he was tasked with physically driving the information from office A to office B. Great, that will solve the problem of hackers. He put the information that was in kind of computer tapes, he put it in a backpack. He had the backpack on the front of his car seat, and he stopped for lunch, and he left the backpack on the front of his car seat. And of course, a backpack or a handbag, certainly a laptop, visible from a car, is something like that is the simplest thing to attract a thief's interest. And so the highly sensitive health information was stolen as a result of that. So it didn't take a sophisticated global cyber criminal. It just took somebody, a regular person walking up and down the street looking for an opportunity. We've had cases where it's been two large drugstore chains, for example, were putting information with sensitive health data in the trash and throwing the trash away at a dumpster in the back of the drugstore. It doesn't take much for dumpster divers to go right on in there, grab that paperwork, and get health insurance information, social security numbers, credit card numbers, because the information was carelessly thrown in a public dumpster that anybody can get. We've all heard stories about a lost laptop or a lost thumb drive. So this is just one way, Ms. Atkins, of saying it's not just cybersecurity, it's security. Even just in a small business office, I heard a story, not too long ago about a small business in Texas that used consumer credit reports a lot. And anybody who's ever applied for a mortgage or applied for a loan knows your credit report has just about everything but your blood type. You know, it's got your all of your bank account information, your credit card information. And they were very clear that the policy was at the end of the day, your desk had to be clear. And all of that paperwork had to be safely stored in a locked drawer in the desk. So one tip for businesses is to make sure every one of your employees has a secure place to put that data, especially when it's in paper form. So she had a kind of a clean desk at the end of the day. She was also known as a very, very good baker. And what she would do is get in first thing in the morning, and for every employee that had a clean desk, she'd leave a homemade blueberry muffin for them. Now, am I suggesting that it's required by the law to leave muffins for your employees? Of course not. But I think what it says is that encouraging your own employees and reminding yourself about the care to take about every form of security to keep this information safe, and to make sure you're training the people who have access to it to be as concerned and careful about it as you are. So I think those are kind of just a few of the very basics that we think businesses, especially small businesses, should have in mind.
I know I've heard about the dumpster divers before, and part of me is ashamed to say it, but I didn't think that existed until it happens to somebody, and then you find out on the news, like, oh my gosh, they got all this information from the dumpster. And it's just really unfortunate. You know, you may not be thinking that you would ever do something like that, but there are people out there that are waiting for an opportunity to do something like that, like the backpack situation. They didn't know there was and very important paper or documentation in that backpack, but it was an opportunity, and it unfortunately that person did take advantage of it, and now the company is in a very bad situation. And that person who had the backpack, I'm sure they feel just horrible. It was just, I just went to go get some lunch. I came right back to the car, maybe 5-10 minutes even, and then just like that, in a blink of an eye. So I definitely don't think incentive is a horrible thing. Like you said, not encouraging everyone to buy a blueberry muffin or bake all the time, but just a little bit of encouragement. Words go a long way. Just encouraging your employees, like, please do your best. Like, have you talked to IT about this question before you go home and start working from home? That I learned was like a big thing from working from here. And I think you're completely right. Companies should look more into how can I help my employee learn what is out there, such as, I feel like you're going to get into it, but I don't want to ruin it. But I know like phishing scams and just a bunch of opportunity scams like that. I won't talk too much about it because I know you have.
Well, I was just going to add, one of the best investments a company can make for security is something as simple as a $50 shredder. Making sure that one shredder is right next to the photocopier in the office. We've all had the circumstance where we photocopied a sensitive paper and found out that it's a little askew, or maybe the toner didn't work. It's terribly tempting just to throw that in the trash, which winds up in the dumpster. But that kind of stuff really ought to be shredded. And I think that, shredders are not only for big businesses and small businesses. I know it may not sound like the most glamorous and desired holiday gift or birthday gift to give somebody, but especially if you have a home office or even for your home information. I look at how frequently I will get credit card statements or bank statements that I no longer need to keep. I have a shredder, sitting 3 feet from me at my desk at home to make sure I make it as difficult as possible for a dumpster diver to recycle and reuse personal information. Where we don't want to see information show up is where it showed up in a number of our cases, what's called the dark web, which is the shopping mall for fraudsters. You know, the our example in our Wyndham case against the hotel chain, they were hacked not once, not twice, but three times. More than 600,000 consumer credit cards were found on a Russian website. And were, you know, and consumers had to go through the difficulty of, you know, getting new credit card numbers and explaining to their credit card company that charges weren't theirs. You know, what's at risk with identity theft and credit card fraud is huge, which is why I'm so glad that so many businesses are becoming more aware of what's at stake.
It's truly unfortunate. Like you said, Shredder may not be the most appealing gift, but it is the most effective gift. And not only does it save your employee, it saves the organization as a whole. And I think that's what people need to start looking at. It is not, well, I would never do something like that. There is somebody out there that would. We need to look at an organization and bring everybody on the same page to protect the organization and ourselves.
Well, and, you know, wrap it up with nice paper, put a bow on it. It's nice and big, you know, and watch the recipient's eyes get wide. I think give it a little thought and you'll realize it's a great gift.
I think it's a great gift. We have a couple of shredders here placed strategically everywhere. Like you said, by the printer, in common areas where there's a lot of employees, where we have a bunch of paper stacked, they're strategically placed for situations like that to make it not so easy to just throw away the documentation. Yeah. What are some basic things business owners should do to keep their networks and data safe?
I think when it comes to keeping networks and data safe, a lot of it is, you know, what we call kind of just good cybersecurity hygiene, making sure that your antivirus software is properly installed and updated regularly, making sure that you have a firewall, making sure you have relatively inexpensive software that can detect who's coming into your network and who's going out, you know, what's going out of the network. Oftentimes, the biggest tip-off for a company that they have been hacked and data is being stolen is when their IT department sees a big spike in information leaving the network and going elsewhere. And so, you know, that kind of, those kinds of basics are really important. Certainly another real important basic, and this is really important for small business, is to limit who has access to sensitive information. You know, yes, the personnel person, maybe the accounting person needs to have access to credit card data, needs to have access to social security or health information data. But for a lot of small businesses that may have just started as one or two employees and have now grown, you know, all employees should not have an all access pass to everything on the network. It just isn't wise. You know, you hate to think of it, but there have been a number of cases where that we have brought that the perpetrator of the data theft was somebody in-house. You know, you don't like to have to encourage suspicion among colleagues and employees. You'd like to think nobody's going to do that, but you still have to be careful. And that includes temporary employees, people brought in about around holiday time, but limit who has access to the sensitive stuff. I don't need access to my colleagues' W-2s. That's not my job. I don't need that. I shouldn't have that. Certainly the use of strong passwords is an important thing. We have brought more than one case where the password to the database that included customer credit card information was either the company name, was the infamous 123123, or was the default password that that was on the software when the company bought it. You know, we all, when we buy, let's say a new router, all of us have to go through what they call that wizard procedure, where that setup procedure, where they give you the opportunity to change the password. Businesses and consumers should change the default password. We've had more than one case where what the hacker did was simply try the well-known default passwords, and every now and then they get lucky and they break in. And so I think by, you know, limiting access, by using strong passwords, by watching who's going in and out, And the other thing I'd want to mention about that, Ms. Atkins, is the importance of what I would call data minimization. You know, I've been around long enough. You know, I was there for kind of the FTC's first internet cases. And back when e-commerce just started, there was a feeling that businesses should collect everything they can about consumers, every bit of information about their employees. And let me make a suggestion that that is a very 20th century view of data. It's not a 21st century view of data. If you don't need the information, if you don't have a legitimate business need for it, don't ask for it and don't collect it in the first place. Because information you don't have is information you do not have to protect. It's a load off your back. I think of something as simple as this. Let's say somebody wants to do a birthday promotion that you get a free ice cream cone on your birthday. You don't need the year of birth. It would be enough to say, oh, my birthday's on May 9th. Just May 9th is not going to be of much help to a hacker. May 9th, 1982 can be help to a hacker because they can use that information to perhaps make a fraudulent birth certificate, something along those lines. But by collecting that birth year, by collecting a social security number without a valid reason, it just ups the ante at the level of security companies need. Make it easy on yourself. Don't collect it if you don't need it. And similarly, once you have, once the legitimate business need is over, for example, if you've used the customer's credit card number, the transaction's gone through, you're done now. If there is no need to keep the credit card number or the number on that backstripe, make sure it's securely deleted. It'll save you security, you know, money to protect that information, and it will save you headaches that if a hacker does get in, you have far less that they can exploit.
I had a quick question. So regarding when you said the 20th century view and the 21st century, do you think the mindset and change like of overview happened because there are more scams, more frauds being reported now in the 21st century versus in the 20th?
That's a really good question. And, you know, the FTC does have a website, reportfraud.ftc.gov, where we strongly encourage businesses and consumers to report what they see out there. And it's not just for when they themselves have been targeted by a scammer. It's if they see a scam, even if they were able to spot it and resist it, by letting us know, we maintain that information in what we call our Consumer Sentinel database. And that is a database that has, we accept reports not only from consumers, but from state attorneys general, from some Better Business Bureaus, from some other law enforcers, and also some non-governmental organizations that collect these sorts of complaints and reports. We put that information together, and we have a database that is accessible only by legitimate law enforcement that go through training. But all that information is really useful in for us and for our brothers and sisters in law enforcement to put cases together. So we study and slice and dice that data every year, and we find a lot of interesting things that you might not imagine. Certainly, at you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people are surprised by is the age of consumers who are most likely to be the targets of scams. Most people think it's older consumers. It's actually younger consumers.
Wow, I thought it was older as well, because I've heard a lot about like the grandparent scams, and well, that makes sense because it's the young children. Okay. Yeah.
But the other part of that, the other side of that coin, is that when older consumers are the victims of scams, the dollar amount lost is much greater.
So that's very interesting.
Yes, younger consumers are more frequently targeted and more frequently become the targets of scams. Older consumers, the numbers are less, but when they are the target of scams, can often lose their life savings. So it's, you know, so that's one thing we've learned from this data. The other thing we've learned is a real growth in the proliferation of scams through social media platforms. It used to be just telemarketing by telephone, or maybe bogus sweepstakes that were in the sent in the mail. Now we're finding that social media platforms are one of the biggest ways that perpetrators reach out to people to try to target them for scams. And that's both, consumers as well as small businesses. So those social media platforms, we have a real concern about that. We now, just a few weeks ago, have sent out reports to, I think, the eight major social media platforms to ask what steps they're taking to protect their users from fraudulent ads and things like that. Certainly, we at the FTC want to do our part, but we think the platforms have a role to play too, Ms. Atkins, because they are making money from the advertising of these scams. Mm-hmm. And we don't think that's right. And so I think one of the reasons why we're seeing a proliferation is because of that social media influence. So, but what's interesting, we issue a report every year, broken down by age group, broken down by the kind of scams. And the one part I think is kind of interesting, broken down by state. And so you can see what forms of scams are more likely to target consumers in Florida versus consumers in Texas or New York or Arizona or California. One of the reasons that we've seen a certain, certainly a growth in what I would call Sunbelt states, in Florida, in Arizona, in Texas, in Southern California, is the mobility of the population. That can often be the kind of thing that telemarketing scammers or other kind of fraudsters try to exploit. That's one of the things you've asked, just a fascinating question, is it that more people are reporting or is it that there are more scams? I think the answer to both questions, Ms. Atkins, is yes.
I know, we recently just did a podcast talking about the 2022 report on scams. And just like you said, broke it down by state, zip code, city, just really down to just specific detail. And from that, you guys were able to gather and see that, unfortunately, minorities are being targeted. And from that, you just recently launched your new Native American website. So I just want to give props to that. That will be also in the link description as well. So your data really does do a tremendous amount, just like you were able to create a new website. So thank you for all that FTC does.
Well, finding that information, we represent and serve every community. And we think we have an obligation to make sure that we live up to that obligation. And so, when it comes to members of Native American communities, when it comes to members of the military, I'm an Army brat myself, we find that members of the military community are often also targeted for those kinds of things. Rural consumers are another group that has been underserved in the past. Certainly African American consumers, Spanish speaking consumers, we really are working hard to step up to make sure that since all consumers are taxpayers and are paying our salaries, if you will, that we have an obligation to do what we can to protect every community. And I think it was the data we learned by proactive people going to reportfraud.ftc.gov, by going to that site, that's how we learned about the extent to which we're seeing these things that are targeting members of the Native American community. And so speaking up is a real powerful tool in every consumer's hands.
Well, I admire your motivation and what you said really just like kind of give me goosebumps because it really does matter. It really does go down to the person, and speaking up truly does matter. And thank you for looking in and trying to create equality for everyone, because that's very, very important. So your data, once again, is extremely important, and you guys are not only collecting it, you're doing something with the data, which is even more incredible. My next question is, many entrepreneurs we work with want to bring their businesses online. What are some things they should consider when building their website?
Yeah, I think it's important when entrepreneurs are building their website. Well, first, we understand just about everybody has to have a website and have a web presence. And that's, a given. I think this is where a tiny little investment in advance can really pay off. I've had family members that have, that had small businesses that just kind of tried to do a do-it-yourself website. And there's nothing the matter with that, but it helps to have somebody with a little bit of security expertise. And by investing the money up front, and it's not an expensive proposition, but investing up front to make sure that your website is secure is probably the best thing companies can do. There are a lot of resources through the FTC, through the Small Business Administration. I think the other thing that that members of every entrepreneurial community can do is talk to successful businesses that have already done it. You need your own board of directors. And so I would suggest, entrepreneurs go to other members of their community to say, what do I need to be thinking about? I see you've got a great website. It looks good. It has the sense of a secure website. What can you teach me about that? And by gathering information up front, by investing in a little money, by asking questions, let's say, of your web hosting company. If your web hosting company, everybody's going to have to get a web host that wants an online presence, ask questions. And if they don't have answers, or if they give you gobbledygook kind of answers, don't do business with them. There are things that they can do to help you set up the website using the best email, the most secure email version, by making sure that your software is updated, by keeping it patched and up to date. But by asking questions, you're in the driver's seat as an entrepreneur when you're hiring a web host. Don't give anybody your business and your hard-earned money if they're not answering your questions about security.
That's very good advice. Thank you very much for that. I know creating a website can be nerve-wracking, and not knowing all information is even more nerve-wracking.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just setting yourself up for exposure. So ask the questions. Please ask the questions. Is there anywhere on the FTC, sorry, I forgot to ask this question earlier. I know in the past when I've reported a phone call scam, after I've reported it, steps pop up for me to like how to proceed afterwards. If someone is reporting a cyber scam or anything like that, is there a follow, like a similar situation that they'll come up with step one, step two?
Well, let me put it in two different categories. We have a really important site people need to know about, our identity theft site, so that people who have been targets of identity theft, I've been one myself, so I can refer to our idtheft.gov site, not only as working at the FTC, but also as a consumer. That offers for people who have been targeted for identity theft, step-by-step instructions. And if you go to identitytheft.gov, you put in some information, the site is secure, of course, and it will help you create a step-by-step action plan about, depending on the kind of identity theft that was involved. I turned out to be a victim of tax identity theft. Somebody filed a tax return, and most importantly, got my refund in my name. And so I needed to be dealing with the IRS about that. And idtheft.gov is very good. Identitytheft.gov is very good about making sure to give folks a step-by-step guide for how to go through that. Now, aside from that, if consumers or businesses are simply reporting in our database, in our reportfraud.gov database, they will get asked follow-up questions. They will not always hear from anybody afterward, simply because we get 4 million reports a year. And so I have to assure people, every single one of those reports is looked at. It is coded in our system. It is shared with other law enforcers. This is one of the means we use in bringing our cases. But it may be the case, unfortunately, that not all 4 million people receive a follow-up from us. So just something to bear in mind, just because you don't hear back does not mean that information is not really seriously of interest to us.
Would you advise at a certain point, after a certain amount of time, to follow up, or would you advise to just wait and wait for your response? How would you advise to go about
that? Yeah, I think, we do have a consumer response center that, can provide additional information. So we do have, and I'll make sure folks have the toll-free number. We do have a consumer response helpline that might be able to be of assistance. But it will not always be the case that we are able to give additional information. And part of the reason for this is that, by law, our investigations are non-public. So we are not able to say, oh, thanks, Ms. Atkins. Here's what we're doing with the information you gave us. We subpoenaed company XYZ. We're deposing the company CEO. Obviously, that's law enforcement information. Just as when you go to a police department, often that information, is not shared. I appreciate how frustrating that can be. And I wish we had for 4 million people who could do that. But I think the important thing is to file the report initially. And once that report is filed, if consumers do need follow-up information, our consumer.ftc.gov website has hundreds of articles about every kind of scam you can imagine, as you know, kind of the grandparent scam, the phishing scam. We also have a lot of information at our cybersecurity for small business website, and I'll make sure that folks get that link too. We have a lot of information kind of self-help that companies and individuals can use to help protect themselves.
Thank you very much for the clarification. And like you said, the best prevention is to prevent ahead of time. So if you're a small business, I highly, highly recommend you check out the small business website. Even though you haven't been scammed, it's always good to see what steps to take after and kind of have the knowledge of, okay, now I know what to do if something like this happens. So thank you very much. Yeah.
The other thing that site has, Ms. Atkins, is it has training materials for businesses staff. No small business should feel obligated to start from scratch. Oh my gosh, I need to reinvent the wheel. How do I figure out how to train my own staff? It has quizzes and videos and handouts to give the basics to staff and to your own employees. And so my suggestion is that, I hate to always bring this back to baked goods, but I guess I kind of am. This is the time to brew a pot of coffee, to maybe buy some donuts or bring in some fruit salad, and have a 45-minute staff meeting about cybersecurity at your office. And you can use the materials, the handouts, the videos, the quizzes on our cybersecurity for small business site, rather than having to create this all yourself. We want to be able to partner with you in that way, to be able, you've got to build, your listeners have businesses to run. We appreciate that. So we hope we can save some time by providing them those resources, that have, how to spot a phishing scam. Some of our major cases in recent months against very big company names have been the result of phishing scams. It is very easy for either by phone or by email. I'm new in your IT department, or I'm at your new corporate headquarters, or I'm a new client, maybe your boss hasn't mentioned me yet, but I need to get this database. The other one I love is, and by love I mean hate, is the, I'm from your IT department and I need your password. If you're from my IT department,
you should have my password.
I think you have my password. But yeah. Letting, and I think remote work, I think, has made this even more difficult. Or home-based work can make this tougher. When I was in the office every day and I saw something suspicious, I could walk right next door and say to my friend, you know, I got this email. Did you get this same email that said it was from the IT department? This looked a little questionable to me. What do you think? With remote work, that's a little more difficult. And so my response is that the best thing employees can do is never respond immediately. If it says, you know, even if it's something that says, that appears to be coming from the boss's email address and says, I need you to wire money for a big contract, or I need to have gift cards sent to me for important customers, my suggestion is take that information in and always verify it, not with a responsive email, because the responsive email could go back to the scammer, mm-hmm. but by pick up the telephone and contact the person at a number that you know to be legitimate, or in an email you know to be legitimate, and say, did you just email me, needing account information about our ABC client? All employees want to work fast, want to respond to the boss quickly, but what the boss really wants, I would suggest, is for employees to take a minute to think, is this really what it says? And they will be very grateful by training employees to look out for those things in advance.
And your tools can help with that as well. I imagine that there's a whole bunch of videos telling you about what to look out for and what are red flags. I know in our previous podcast, we talked about like gift cards are just right immediately a red flag. If the minute they ask for a gift card, it's 99.9% a scam. So, and your boss would never ask for a gift card. It's just, yeah.
Well, I think the other thing we're finding is that government imposter scams are using that too. You know, for example, a small business that's just, let's say, opening up a snack bar or something mm-hmm. like that, may get a telephone call or an email saying, I'm from the city health department. You need a license. We're going to shut you down because you don't have an appropriate business license. You need to wire us the money by the close of business, or we're going to come out and lock the door. If I were a small business person, that would scare the heck out of me. The idea that my business is going to get shut down. Well, that's not usually how government agencies work. Mm-hmm. And one of the telltale signs is when the government person is asking for gift cards or asking for iTunes cards. Really? I don't see that. Anybody who has a state license, maybe it's a law license or a beautician's license, or a contracting license or a plumbing license, those lists are public. And so scammers will often contact people saying, and I've received these myself, I'm calling from the State Bar Association and you haven't paid your bar dues and you're going to lose your license to practice law if you don't send us $500 in gift cards by the close of business. And of course, the immediate thing is, oh no, but then you take a step back. The state bar wants gift cards? No, gift cards are for gifts. That's the best advice we can give.
Mm-hmm. And these scammers do try to tack onto your emotion. From what I've gathered from just talking to everyone from the FTC, including you, they really try to pull out your heartstrings and make decisions right on the fly. And like you said, just take a minute to breathe. Especially if you're working at home, you don't have, like, here, I can walk next door and ask real quick, hey, like, does this sound weird to you? And of course, the more you talk about it, the more you realize, okay, no, this is a situation. Whereas you're at home, I highly suggest you either contact IT, maybe someone, there's someone in your HR department, if you have an HR department, or your boss. Your boss will always know who to contact. So always contact them first.
Well, and this is where, entrepreneurs and business people, I think, have a special place in their local communities and in their families. And this is where I think that entrepreneurs can play an important role educating the community too, and their family. We try to, suggest, for example, anytime you have the entire family gathered around the table, especially multi-generational folks, to talk about what we've called the grandparent scam. And that's where, it appears to be the grandchild claiming, I'm on vacation and I've been in an accident. I need you to wire $500. And please don't tell mom and dad. I really need, or I've been put in jail. I got a DWI in another part of the state or something like that. And that's part of, and they're very good at it and very convincing. And so that's one of the areas where I think we've been real concerned that you can educate every member of your family and your community. And as I said, every time, whether it's, around the table at a Sunday dinner or just pizza on Friday, talking about things like this, mm-hmm. to mention those things. And it matters a lot when it comes to a person that's respected in the family because of their business knowledge. And so that's why listeners play that important role to educate members of their communities, maybe their places of worship, maybe their fraternal organizations that they're members of, their unions, community groups, their kids' schools. This is just something we should all be talking about very regularly. One of the things I'll specifically warn people about is our real fear about some of the new scams that can literally clone a person's voice.
I was just about to mention that. That is the most terrifying thing I have learned this week. And I know that also, like I said, really pulls at your heartstrings when you hear your loved one on the phone and it sounds just like them. So why wouldn't it be them? Now you have to question everything. Do you have any advice on that? Because I know that is just absolutely terrifying.
It really is. And it's something we're working on. We're looking at very closely. I think one of the things, especially for older relatives and these kind of family emergency scams, is to, make sure that the older relatives have the younger relatives' cell phone numbers, have, as many different ways to connect them as possible. And and to call back at a number that they know to be legitimate. And also just not to believe that don't tell mom or dad thing. This is where folks just have to be transparent and families have to protect themselves. But I think by talking about that, it used to be that when the grandparents said, well, gee, that doesn't sound like you, doesn't sound like your voice. The scammers are so clever. They would say, oh yes, they've put a tube down my throat. I don't sound very good. Or they haven't given me any water. They would use excuses. Now they can actually clone the voice. And that's why I think families need to have emergency plans in advance. And this is also very helpful, not exactly on topic, but also helpful, Ms. Atkins, during weather emergencies. Or other kinds of security emergencies out there that, I've talked a lot to my own grandparents about during World War II, how families had to have ways to keep in touch if they had been separated. And, fast forward 75 years, 80 years, we still have to be thinking that way. Make sure everybody has everybody's phone numbers. Make sure everybody has a trusted contact person, a family friend, one of the people we call aunt and uncle that may not actually be an aunt and uncle, but somebody close to our family's heart, to make sure that they are all on the same page for these emergency type scams.
Absolutely. I think that's a very important topic that you just brought up. I know you said kind of off topic, but I think it is a part of it, because when people think of cybersecurity and like attacks on small businesses, I think automatically our minds go to, okay, like W-2s, credit cards, more personal information. But then out of all to protect your small business, it goes deeper into it. And you realize, like you said, you do have to start having these family conversations, because God forbid your business goes under, how are you going to take care of your loved ones? And I think that's what the scammers really attack. So I think having those conversations with your family is key. And I'm very happy that you mentioned that, because I don't think we've talked about that enough. Like sitting at the dinner table and saying, hey, like these are the scams out there. Do you remember our emergency plan? So if you call me, I want you to ask me this question. Like, do I know where do you go in a state of emergency? And if they say the wrong place, it's not me. And I need you to call me immediately to let me know. So having that is very important.
You know, I just used that method that you just mentioned, Ms. Atkins, just a few weeks ago. I heard from a friend from school that I hadn't heard from literally in 50 years. And, you know, it was, hi, Leslie, you haven't heard from me in a long time. And I thought, you know, it just was very random. I was happy to hear from her. But then I thought, you know, was this found on a social media site about the school I went to or something like that? And I did something kind of crazy. I said to her, you know, what was the name of the boy that you had a crush on in eighth grade? Or what was the name of our swim team? You know, or where did you work freshman year in high school? Or what kind of car did your brother drive that we once took out without his permission? You know, asking a personal question. And having that set up. So the advice you just mentioned, Ms. Atkins, is exactly what I do personally. Even when I get an email, and you know, and of course it turned out to be a longtime friend I hadn't been in touch with, and I'm glad we're connected. But you know, she said, thanks for asking that. I'm gonna be more careful in the future. To make sure that if I'm emailing out of the blue, somebody knows who I am.
I honestly, that's something I do with my family as well. Like sometimes my mom will be like, hey, do you remember 5 years ago? And I'm like, yes. So I do have a couple more important questions I wanted to ask you, because I know we could just keep going all day. You mentioned email authentication. What is that and why is it important?
Email spoofing of business is a really big problem. Scammers will fake your email address and your domain name and make it look like they are sending an email from you that's really not from you. And there are methods that your web host company can help you with to use more secure methods of email. And I think this is, you know, this fits in with this notion of choosing a web host. The FTC has information about email authentication on our cybersecurity site that gives some questions for companies to ask about different web hosts and how secure their email is going to be. But I think the other thing that businesses can do is let your customers know, we are not going to ask for your account number. We will never contact you for your credit card number out of the blue. And, you know, here are things that we are, you know, these are policies that we have that we don't break. And so if you get an email claiming to need your account number, it's not us. Don't respond and instead let us know about it, because it's a fraud.
And that's a very simple solution. You know, you just simply, you can either put it on an email, you can put it on the end of a receipt, you can, however you run your business, you can find a way. Maybe the cashier is constantly telling someone like, hey, by the way, or, you know, there's just many ways to go about it. But I think that's very smart to start letting your consumers know, so they know what to watch out for.
Well, and they appreciate, I think they like a company that cares about their security. You know, it is a cost-free way to build goodwill with businesses. And you want to do business with a business that cares about you. And I think that's an easy, inexpensive way to show your customers that you care.
Yes, if the business does right by you, you should do right by them. I would like to think that. What about if I'm running my business from home? What are some precautions I need to take to keep my business data safe at home?
You know, home-based businesses, small businesses in general, are the backbone of the American economy. We all know that. And home-based businesses are one of the best ways that people can get involved in the entrepreneurial community. I think especially it is, it's great for women, who a lot of women have become entrepreneurs through home-based businesses. So it's something we think is just a great development in our economy. The difficulty, the best possible solution, and this is a solution that costs some money, is to possibly, if at all possible, have a separate computer for the family and for the business. Because when you have kids who may be downloading things, maybe you have teenagers who are, dealing with social media and may not be as careful as they need to be, you do want to keep that separate. Now, we appreciate not everybody can afford that, especially a brand new home-based business, which is why it's important to make sure that your antivirus software is updated, that you have firewalls in place, that you're using that good security hygiene. And it's also something, the FTC has a lot of materials about talking to kids and teenagers about staying safe online. And that actually, it certainly is good just keeping them safe. It also can be an important step to keep your home-based business safe. To remind kids and teenagers, when you download something onto the family computer, it could actually be putting something malicious that mm-hmm. could put mom or dad or grandma's or uncle's business at risk. And so I think by educating other family members, by trying to separate out using firewalls, using antivirus, the family stuff from the home-based business stuff is very important. But let's face it, even your family stuff needs to be protected. I have my tax records on my home computer. I have my bank information on my home computer. That can be as much of a target for identity thieves as a small business.
Of course. And like you said, circle back to have conversations with your family so your kids know that when you click download, you could be downloading some malware and that could be very, very, very bad. So circle back to what you said, keeping those conversations going. Now, let's talk about cyber scams that may target small businesses. How can a business owner protect from ransomware and what are some steps to take if their business is attacked? I know you mentioned reporting it to FTC.gov and the small business. What else can we do?
Yeah, ransomware I find to be one of the most frightening developments. Mm-hmm. These are obviously scammers who lock companies out. Yes, it's happened to small businesses. It's also happened to major hospitals. It's happened to government agencies. These are sophisticated international cyber criminals that are engaged in this. So it's a frightening crime. The best defense is, of course, prevention. We have a lot of materials on our cybersecurity for small business site that talk about that. And again, a lot of it is using strong passwords, is using antivirus, is using all kinds of firewall protection. The other key thing, as you've already said, Ms. Atkins, is the importance of really reminding employees to think not once, not twice, but multiple times before clicking on any link and downloading anything. Because the most common way in our experience that ransomware gets loaded onto a network is through a clicked link. And so, I try to be very careful. Now, let's face it, I'm going to be sending you some links. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we all understand, when I send Ms. Atkins links to some of the FTC resources, but she knows it's me. She's expecting it. But if it's something you're not expecting, yet again, take a minute, take more than a minute, and before you click. I think all of us have that natural tendency. Look at this. This is fascinating. Oh my gosh, what is it? You know, it really can't be that way. Now, if a business is already, you know, has been the subject of a cyber attack, they should contact the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And we have those contact information on our cybersecurity site. The question always comes up about issues like cybersecurity insurance, about how you respond to ransomware. I'm not sure there's one easy answer, but I think the FBI is a really good source, because let's bear in mind, this is a federal crime. Mm-hmm. If your business has been targeted by ransomware, this is a crime. These are sophisticated criminals, and you want to get the Federal Bureau of Investigation involved.
Thank you so much for that. I just can't stop talking about how to report it and what to do if something does happen, because I know for me, when I panic, I forget everything. So I think it's just amazing that you have a location where if God forbid something does happen, I can go to FCC and I can click here, and then it gives me everything I need. And you guys actually have it by situation.
Yes.
So it's very, very direct, like you said earlier, step by step for your current situation and what you are going through, instead of having to scroll through, well, I'm not going through this, well, I'm kind of going through this. No, it's very right there, which is amazing. And like you said, you do have your, not customer service, but you have an area where people can go to and ask questions if they're having that moment, like, did I file this correctly? Don't be afraid to ask those questions. I know you guys get a lot of responses every day, but I'm sure you appreciate just the follow-up, making sure I did it correctly, because the FTC wants you to report it. So they're going to do everything they can to help you report it if you're having an issue with that.
Yeah, we want to hear from you. You know, consumers and businesses are our eyes and ears out there. We know what you all what you all tell us about. And so that's really important in setting our law enforcement priorities, in finding out what you are seeing out there. And so I like to think of it that, you know, every American is deputized to kind of contact us. Again, you don't need to have lost money to something. You don't need to, if just you spot something questionable, let us know about it.
And I love that too. Like, you can't be too sure. You can never be too, you know, safe. Be safe. Just be safe. What are other scams should small business owners be on alert about?
As we said, small businesses have become a leading target for scammers. And a lot of them are using very old scams in very new ways. One of the ways that that small businesses have literally lost millions of dollars to are what we call the false invoice kind of scam. What this is that your business will get either a phone call or an invoice. These used to be done by fax machine, but now usually by email or by telephone, that basically says, I'm just following up. You owe us $246 on an account overdue. And of course, every small business wants to make sure their accounts payable are up to date. There is a real tendency to just write the check or pay the money that's owed. Well, it's not really owed. It's a scam. And they're relying on the fact that, in a lot of small businesses who may not have central purchasing, a lot of these may involve business supplies, office supplies. Something may show up, light bulbs or toner or something like that may show up at your office. You don't recall ordering it, but it's easy for the small business to say, Mary, maybe Fred got that. Maybe Joe ordered it. I better pay that bill. And so they pay the bill, even though they did not authorize that purchase at all. And so, our suggestion is, they will receive phone calls from people saying, we'd like to send you a free sample of our merchandise. And of course, then they follow up with a bill. And when small businesses balk, and when they say, I'm not paying this, I didn't order this, the scammers really raise their threats and say, we're going to report you to the credit bureaus. We're going to sue you for non-payment. We will ruin your credit. We'll ruin your reputation if you don't pay up. And I think a lot of small businesses, and I understand the motivation, out of fear, just cut that check. And we suggest instead, being aware, having one person, even in a small business, making sure that office supply purchases or business directory listings or things like that are business licenses, as we talked about before, are handled by one person. And I suggest, this is just me talking, making that one person sort of the most skeptical, ornery person on your staff. The person who's not scared at all to say, I think this is a scam, where's your proof? So pick that person. This often happens, and this is really sad, Ms. Atkins, this often happens at volunteer organizations, at houses of worship, at community centers, we've had this happen at homeless shelters that rely on volunteer workers, that the volunteer workers who aren't, for example, they'll get a phone call that says, we're just verifying your order for toner. And the volunteer worker, not knowing about it, says, oh yeah, sure. What's your address? 105 Main Street. Oh, okay. Well, what they don't know is they're being recorded. And when the company challenges the charge, they then get played back the tape recording from the employee or the volunteer that says, oh yes, send the delivery to 105 Main Street. And they try to use that as proof that the company authorized the charge, which they did not. These, again, are well-organized criminal scammers that do this. The FTC took action with federal prosecutors recently with a company that made $35 million doing this.
Gosh.
$35 million. I am very pleased to say, pleased may be a funny word, but I'm very pleased to say the perpetrators of that scam were sentenced to federal prison, which is where, again, just me talking, I think they belonged. Mm-hmm. So do alert anybody who might be picking up your telephone. Talk about it at your business. If it comes to subscriptions or supplies, if it's a small business, designate that one person. Everything goes through that one person. And that gives all of us kind of an out. I don't know if we ordered those supplies. Let me have your telephone number and I'll have our supply person call you back. What you're generally get then is a fake telephone number or a fake email. And also talk to, anybody who might be walking past and picking up the phone. Talk about this at places like daycare centers, at community centers, and how sad that scammers take advantage of them too, and they do.
Oh, it's completely disgusting, in my opinion. I think it's truly horrible, and I would just like to point out, there are success stories, like you said, the FTC truly is fighting for you, and they are for the consumer, as you stated earlier, and, there are success stories. You might not always in those situations get your money back or get what you lost, but at least the person who committed this crime is behind bars at best situation, and if not, then they face the penalty at least they're being, something's happening, some course of justice is being taken. So
really, I think the other part of that, we like to get consumers their money back anytime we can. We have to go to court to do it, and there are some limits legally on our ability. I won't go into the details, but there was a Supreme Court case 2 years ago that makes it tougher for us to get money back for consumers. But we do our best when we can to return money to consumers. And let me make it clear, every penny that we win back that we are able to return to consumers goes to consumers. I always tell people, you know, here's how to figure out the percentage that goes to the Federal Trade Commission. Zero. None. None of that money goes to us. It goes back to the consumers when we can do that. But the other thing to bear in mind is, even let's say, if we can't get money back, by filing that report and telling us about what happened, small business A is helping to protect small business B or consumer C. So I realize it's not the same as getting the money back, but this is something we all can do just as part of our communities to help each other out. That this is, you know, isn't this part, you know, isn't this what we all should be doing to try to be helpful members of our societies, of our communities? And that's another reason why it's so important to report.
Of course, be the example you want to see in the world. It, I'm unfortunate that other people don't do it, but you should do it for you and for your loved ones and those who aren't your loved ones. It, good karma will come to you, I promise. FTC has many free resources that help people avoid scams. Are there any materials specifically for small business? Where can small business owners find them? And once again, if you could please say the website of them. So I didn't want to be at the bottom, but just in case. Yeah,
just a couple of them. Yes, you can go to www.ftc.gov/smallbusiness. Has a lot of resources for small business. ftc.gov. /cybersecurity has a lot of very important things. The other place where you can get to all of this is business.ftc.gov, because this has information not only about protecting your business, but how to comply with the law. Let's say you want to send an email to prospective customers. Mm-hmm. Are you allowed to do that? Yes, but there are certain legal rules that you have to follow. I think we all have heard of probably the CAN-SPAM Act. And what that means is at the bottom of your email to somebody, you have to give away for them to unsubscribe to future emails. So business.ftc.gov has useful information to protect your small business. It also has useful information to make sure you're doing the right thing. We have one particular brochure available about scams that target small business. And you can get copies of this. You can print it out. You can, you know, post the, you know, put a couple copies in your break room or by the coffee machine, you know, just to have something that people can flip through. It goes through, I think, the 7 most common scams, including the government impersonator scam aimed at small business, the phony invoice scam, you know, all of these kinds of things, you know, and offers tips on how businesses can protect themselves.
Truly amazing. I can't say it enough. Truly amazing. And everything will be on the description link or description box below. And if you have any questions in the future, how can people reach out to you and ask any questions, or who should they reach out to?
Sure, they're welcome to reach out to me personally. I may not have the answer, but I will do my best to get them the answer. If they are reporting something, they want to go to reportfraud.ftc.gov. You know, we have that, you know, that site, as well as most of our materials, are in English and Spanish, and we're doing our best to broaden the languages that we have available to consumers. If they're a business owner and have a question about complying with the law, you know, I have the shortest email in the business, lfair at ftc.gov. I can't guarantee that I have the answer, but as I said, I will do my best to put you in touch with someone who does.
Well, thank you so much for giving your contact information. And I had a wonderful time talking to you today. I think we could keep talking for hours, but I'm sure our listeners would like to keep that on for another episode. So I would love to have you back on the show. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention?
I just wanted to thank you, Ms. Adkins, and, you know, say how useful for me as a consumer. I have found a lot of the materials you have on your podcasts. So I think it's a you know, helpful resource for the community. And just to remind folks, as I said, FTC is for the consumer. That includes businesses too. We've got your back.
I don't want to ruin it. I'm going to leave it on that. It was perfect. FTC has your back and they are for the consumer. So that brings us to the end of this episode. I think we're going to end on a very positive note. The FTC is always here for you. Thanks to Leslie Fair for joining us today. Truly appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, thanks for listening to Hope a Thing, a Native American podcast. If you enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Also, visit our website, www.nativelearningcenter.com, to find information on upcoming webinar and virtual trainings. Please be sure to come back for more content. And thank you so much again, Leslie.